Welcome to another episode of Building a Digital Future. In the last episode, we touched on how we're resetting our mindset in terms of achieving positive outcomes from digital construction, digitalization, BIM, ISO 19650, whatever we want to call it. And we're going to carry on in this episode with what does that look like practically? What is it that we need to do hands-on in the business to actually get these outcomes? And we're going to start, again, take a couple of steps back. We're going to start from beginning. We're going to start with what was stated in BS 1192 back in 2007. And basically looking at what it means preparing the business for collaboration and digital workflows. And the first, probably most easiest thing to adopt is the naming convention. There is a specific naming convention outlined in BS 1192, in BIM Level 2 documents, in ISO 19650. This is now an industry standard naming convention that is specified. It's worth knowing that to be BIM compliant, if that is the ambition, to be BIM compliant, it's not a requirement to comply to the exact naming convention of BS 1192. That is not what makes it BIM compliant. What makes it BIM compliant and what is reducing risk and so on to the project is to have a consistent naming convention. And what that means is if I send a file and I call this file 3D model final version test one, okay? And I send that to someone and they receive that, they put that into the project, it's coordinated, it's working. Next week, I'm sending another one and this now is called 3D model test one final version test two. Promise this is the final version. And I send that one. That means that now the information in that file hasn't changed that much, but the name of the file is completely different. So the person who brings that into their environment, they now have to treat that as a completely different file. They can't just upload information and get the latest information kind of seamlessly transition into the work environment. So it has to be treated as a separate type of file. And that comes with some workload, meaning that if we don't have a consistent naming convention on the project, we will increase time, increase risk, increase cost for that project. So simple things like sticking to a standard naming convention will help to reduce those issues. And admittedly, everyone agrees with that. The naming convention specified in BS 1192, and which is now become an industry standard, it's not the most user-friendly way of naming something. However, it is now what is specified on most projects, and it doesn't take that much of a change management structure and support to implement this. So the advice would be adopt this naming convention because it's going to come up on projects in the future, and it just creates a better workflow for the project. So moving on from the naming convention and sharing information between organizations, this is where the process of common data environment comes in. So the CDE was specified as a process in BS 1192, and it's a very important and often overlooked protocol that helps to ensure that we're sending the right type of information out from the office. So this is not only important from a project delivery point of view and the coordination point of view and ensuring that the software can understand the information that we are uploading or linking in or referencing in. But it's also important from a marketing point of view. If the business is sending information that doesn't look right, this doesn't look like the professional architectural drawing from this company, then that's going to have a bad impact on the image of the company itself. So it's important to have a system in place from a business point of view, but also from a project delivery point of view. And the common data environment is basically made up of sections where it's informed on or advised on how information should be stored and processed. So there need to be an environment on the network, on the, let's say the architect's network, where they have project folders and a specific folder structure that is dictating where we are saving certain information. So inside the project environment, there should be some production folder, some work in progress folder. Name of the folder doesn't really matter, but it's an area of the network and the project folder structure where unvalidated information is stored. Basically, a 3D model that is under development, under design, in between project stages. And information that lives in that model in that, you know, work in progress folder means that it can contain errors. So let's say we're working on a design issue. We have a kitchen layout, or we have a fire escape stairs, or we have something that doesn't quite work. And we now need to move things around and maybe create options for the design of that specific space. And this is where the architect is making, you know, design decisions based on information they can see on the screen. And if we were to send that information out from the office, the person receiving the information don't really know what to do with that information. Should they take measurements from there? Should it consider this as being the approved design? Or what's the purpose? So the purpose of the information that lives in the work in progress folder is for work in progress, is to make design decisions on and not to be shared outside of the project team. Okay, so that information shouldn't even go somewhere else on the network. It should stay in that folder. And that information should not be shared. Once we are coming up to a design team meeting and we need to issue out the information for a purpose, then that piece of information needs to be taken out of its environment and validated and checked against some protocol saying, is this information that we're going to be sending today, is it suitable for what the project and its stakeholder needs right now? And to help with that, we have a validation protocol. And the validation protocol is basically listing loads of different questions saying, is the file named correctly? Is the information geo-coordinated? Is the right CAD standards applied? Do the drawings look professional? Do we have whatever information is required? And also the information that is required for the person receiving it. So if the information is read by the structural engineer and it's a design collaboration between engineering and architecture, then the information needs to be relevant to that evaluation and nothing else. And to help with that, we have suitability codes where we can assign a suitability code to a drawing or a model saying, S2, this model is suitable for information, I think it is. And then we know that if it's suitable for information, we're not building from this information. This is just for information we're sharing. Okay, once we have validated and signed this information up to lead the office, then that information is then saved in another folder called like a shared folder, output folder, some other folder that is indicating that this is no longer work in progress. This information has been validated and ready to be issued out of the organization. Then when we have information coming in, information is sent to us. Information is then saved in an incoming folder, meaning that this is information that someone else has sent to us. We don't have responsibility over this. We then take that information and run a validation. So we expect to receive some information, then we're validating against a protocol and saying, this is what I'm expecting. Is this what I received? Is it named correctly? Is it the right geo coordination and so on? And then once we have validated and signed off, this seems suitable, then we take that information into our project environment through the methods of the software. And then we can carry on with our design because now we have reliable information we can base our design decisions on because it's been approved for that specific purpose. Part of this common data environment workflow that we're talking about now, the process, there's also a point when information is being sent to the developer. And this is the information that the developer needs to run tests against their own business plan, their own KPIs for the project to see, so the project is going the right way. Are we getting off track somewhere? Is it starting to cost too much money? Are we getting what we expected to get? And that needs to happen at least in between each project stage where the client gets the information to run validations on. Once the project has been concluded, when the project is finished and it's been built and it's in operation, all the data associated to that project, all the 3D models, all the PDFs, all the Word documents, all the Excel sheets, everything related to that project needs to be archived and stored in some location. And this location is called an asset information model. The asset information model is the archive of all the information related to that project. And that needs to be accessible for people like from building control or later on in the project's life cycle. Let's say there is an accident in the building and something needs to be redesigned and redeveloped. Then we can take information out from this archive location and get 3D models and drawings and everything out and start over the design process and go back into planning and do the construction drawings and go back into construction, only to archive that again and put it back into this asset information model, the complete information source for the entire project. This whole thing is called a common data environment process. And now these days with the ISO 19650 and all the cloud service providers, the cloud service providers had adopted this name, a common data environment. So now we are distinguishing between common data environment process, what we just talked about, and the common data environment solution is where we are sharing the information to. So instead of using couriers or Dropbox or WeTransfer, we now have a cloud platform where we can upload and download information from. So based on this information now that we have about the common data environment, let's say we have a project and we're going to share the 3D model between architecture and structure. And the information shared should be used for making decisions on design. Okay, it's absolutely critical that a geo-coordination system has been set up for the project that is common or true for all parties involved in the project. So structures, services, architecture, and any other people involved needs to have the same coordination system. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But as I am preparing my 3D model for this purpose, I run through the validation process as we talked about earlier. And one of the questions in the validation protocol is then, is the project geo-coordinated? Do we have a geo-coordination management system in place for this project? Because if we don't, then the project is not going to be coordinated. And each of these points in the validation process is meant to reduce a risk somewhere down the line. So we don't just ask questions for the sake of, you know, having a validation protocol. The whole validation protocol is there to ensure that we are reducing risk and cost and so on the project. So when we're asking the question, you know, is it named correctly? Then we know now if it's not named correctly, there's going to be problems with linking or getting the information into another system. And when we're asking the question, is the project geo-coordinated? Then if it's not, then we're not going to be able to make design decisions based on the information. So we need to fix those issues before we can issue the model for this purpose. So practically then, what does this mean? The geo-coordination system is very complicated. So there's not going to be enough time in this episode to go through the ins and outs of geo-coordination. But in a nutshell, geo-coordination basically means that the software only have certain capability to understand geometry and where geometry is located. Okay, if it goes too far away from where the software considers itself to be its center point, then the software and the computer can't make calculations, so the geometry will be displayed incorrectly, and then we can't trust the information. So we need to be working in a relatively small space inside the software to make this coordination system work. And that's true for all software. When we're setting up the geo-coordination system for the project, we are going to base the coordination on, if we were working in the UK, we're going to base the coordination on the OS grid with an OS grid intersection points that comes with easting and nording coordinates. And when we're setting up the project, and this is part of the, we talked about the BIM manager role in previous episode, or if we have a technical team in an organization, it's the responsibility of this technical team or this BIM manager person or another technical person to set this up for every project, because it's very specific. We take a grid intersection point from this OS grid, the easting and nording, and we take a grid intersection point that is close to the site, so it's not too far away. And then we are placing this grid intersection point inside the software where the software zero is, where the software center is, where the software is comfortable calculating the geometry around, okay, within this small space. That means that the site, the project site, is going to land within this small space where the software is comfortable making these calculations. And we have now said this software space, this software point that is considered zero, is not actually zero. You have these easting and nording coordinates that we have taken from this OS survey grid intersection point. Okay. Then there's a few other steps we need to go through that is a little bit too complicated to go into in this episode. But what we're ending up with is a point where we can use a shared coordinate system or a common coordinate system that all the computers involved in the project understands what the numbers are for this grid intersection point, for this coordination point. So the software thinks I'm zero, but the human is saying, actually, you might think you're zero, but you have these grid intersection point numbers here. And everyone on the project needs to have the same setup and the same numbers on their systems, meaning that when we are sharing models between each other, then the computer will read the information in the 3D model and say, I believe I'm zero, but you have told me that there are some other numbers here, and that matches with my setup. So that's okay. You're going to bring the information in, and then the model is going to land where we expect it to land. And in simple terms like this, this sounds like something that can be easily achieved, but this is the number one technical support issue for every project all the time. And it's costing a lot of money and causing a lot of delays on a lot of projects all the time. So it's very important to have a geocoordination management system set up as a management system, not from a BIM compliance point of view, but from a business risk management point of view. Because if we are missing the mark on setting up the geo-coordinates for the project, it will cause delays and errors and risks to the project 100%. How this geo-coordination system is set up is slightly different from different types of software, but the outcome, the output of the system once it's been set up is the same. Meaning that you are able to share information between platforms, not in its native file format, but you can use, you know, DWGs or IFCs, for example. So if you have the system set up with your export settings and so on set up as well, then you can share information between platforms. And this has been proven over and over again on multiple projects. So we know that system is working. The next thing to consider then, let's say we are in the beginning of the journey, and we know that we need to deal with naming convention, and we need to deal with validation protocols, and we need to deal with having a system, a common data environment process of sharing and collaborating together. And we know that we need to have a geo-coordination system, no matter what software we're using. But then the question is, which software is right for the organization? And believe it or not, Revit is not the only tool on the market, even though Autodesk is probably the best at marketing of all its competitors. All the other software does exactly the same thing. However, there are some differences. And I'm going to say all of this on the foundation that my background is in MicroStation. And my favorite software is MicroStation Select Series 2D. Okay, that's my upbringing. And if I were to ever draw anything in 2D, that's the software I would choose. Okay, but this is not, I'm not affiliated with Bentley. This is just my personal experience. And I'm saying that because getting into MicroStation requires a lot of effort, lots of configuration, lots of complicated workflows and tools and functions that you need to learn to be able to operate the software. Once you understand all of that, it becomes a very, very powerful tool. And I dare to say that it's probably the most powerful tool of all the tools available. It's also the most unuser-friendly tool. And if an organization is in a position to have a team that is dedicated to managing configurations and standards and everything specifically for the software, then it's a very good way to go. And the output that you can get from the Bentley side of things, Ecosim now, is exactly the same as you get from Vectorworks, Revit, and ArchiCAD. But it's a much more complicated tool to work with, but it could also be a little bit more powerful and accurate than alternatives. But that's something to consider. ArchiCAD is probably the most popular platform amongst its user group. I don't think I know any other user group who are more, you know, enthusiastic about their own platform than the ArchiCAD guys. And it's true, it's very user-friendly, it's very straightforward. And my personal experience on delivering projects with ArchiCAD is very limited, so I can't really go into the details. I just know that the existing users that I know of are very happy with the platform. And then we have Vectorworks. And Vectorworks and the MicroStation are fairly similar. There's a little bit slightly different user interface in the platform compared to other software that we have these days. And the users have a little bit more access into the configuration and the control of how the software is operating. Again, that's great because it becomes a little bit more powerful tool, but it also becomes less user-friendly. And one thing to consider when we are choosing which platform we need to go forward with if we want to transition from a 2D platform to something else. I mean, if you're coming from a Vectorworks 2D background, it only makes sense to adopt the 3D functionalities of Vectorworks because then you're getting all the BIM benefits, if we're calling that, from the same platform. So that might be a reason to move to Vectorworks. one thing to consider is that the people who are delivering the projects are the main users of the software. And is it appropriate or is it a good business decision to turn each architect or engineer into a highly qualified software operator of a system that is quite complicated, like Vectorworks and MicroStation? So personally, keeping in mind now that I'm coming from the MicroStation background and it's my favorite software, I don't necessarily think that is the right way forward, because what we're trying to achieve here, we're trying to achieve drawing output, we're trying to achieve coordinated 3D models, and we're trying to achieve schedule output, and we're trying to reduce cost and reduce waste and reduce risks and so on into the business and the projects. So should we choose a software that is much more difficult for the users to get used to and operate when we're trying to reduce cost and reduce waste and so on? Personally, I don't think that is the right way forward. And that brings me to Revit. And this is going to sound really biased here now, but it is true that Revit is more user-friendly. Maybe not as user-friendly as ArchiCAD, from what I understand from the ArchiCAD user groups, but it's still by far more user-friendly than MicroStation and Vectorworks. But there's a drawback to that. The drawback is that you're running out of powerful control of the software much sooner than you do with MicroStation and Vectorworks. But is that relevant to the real world application when you have architects and engineers just want to deliver projects? Or is it more a question for my peer group where we're saying Revit might not be as powerful as MicroStation because we have access to much more configuration in MicroStation? But really, who cares about that when it comes to project delivery? It's only people like me and my peer group who cares about that and to be able to control the software in certain ways. But the average architects and engineer, they don't want to know about these kind of things. They just want a software that's going to work for them in a user-friendly way so they can produce drawings and schedules. That is what the purpose is. That is what the business owner should consider when they choose which software platform they should go for. And I am not saying at all that a MicroStation practice should transition to Revit or a Vectorworks practice should transition to Revit. What I'm saying is that when you make a decision of making a transition, because keep in mind here, the questions you need to ask yourself is, what is causing issues for my business right now? What are the small things that I can do this quarter that is going to make a difference for my business in terms of reducing cost, reducing waste, and so on? And if going from 2D to 3D is a decision that needs to be made, the question is then, which platform should you go for? The questions to ask is, how quickly can we make this change? Who's going to make the change? How much is it going to cost? And is it going to cause business disruption? Is it going to have a negative change management protocol to it? Okay. Going from MicroStation 2D to Revit might seem like an adventurous IT and technical transition, and to be fair, it is. But going from MicroStation 2D to MicroStation 3D, or from MicroStation 2D to Ecosim, is much more difficult than it is to transition from MicroStation 2D to Revit. And I know it sounds like I'm trying to sell software here. I'm not. I'm saying this from a practical experience point of view, because I've done this transition in many practices. And the difficulties that people, that humans have with the transition of software in the first place, have to be taken into account. And then the complexity of the software have to be a deciding factor on which direction to go. So Revit is going to be the more user-friendly option. It's going to be faster for a person to get used to the software and get onto the projects and deliver projects faster than it is with any other transition, in my experience. It's also true that Autodesk software costs more money in terms of licenses than the other. That's another thing to consider. So the question for the business owner is, with that investment in the licenses and benefits or the drawbacks that comes with transitioning from one software to the other or going from 2D to 3D, have to be taken into account. How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? Is it going to cause business disruptions? Are people going to be unhappy and suddenly start leaving the practice because we're changing software platform? There's no real right or wrong answers to these things, but the decision have to be made on educated decisions rather than trusting an Autodesk Platinum partner saying, oh yeah, Revit is definitely the choice for you because they're making a huge commission on the sale, over having an educated decision saying, actually moving to Revit might be the best decision for the business because XYZ, or not, choosing another software because X, Y, Z? These are questions that have to be asked and answered inside the business before you make decisions, and not blindly trusting consultants telling you that you need to go one way or the other. So, as usual, there's lots of information coming through me sharing my experiences and my insights and my thoughts about all these different topics. The takeaway from this episode is really that depending on where you are on your journey, there are going to be different milestones. So you might be on a milestone where you haven't won a project yet, or you're trying to win a project where, you know, BIM is a requirement, if we're calling it that. And I mean that you might have to swap or install Revit. You might deliver this project on Revit, let's say. Or you might have already done a couple of projects and, you know, your next milestone where the project are delivered, but things are not quite working as they need to be. Or you're much further ahead where you have, you know, a digital team, or you might even be looking at getting an accreditation. You need to make sure, no matter where you are on your journey, you need to make sure that you have your fundamentals in place inside your organization so you're ready to collaborate and share information with other stakeholders. And this used to be called BIM Level 1. But you need to have your naming convention. You need to have your geo-coordination systems. You need to have your sophisticated CAD standards so you get nice-looking professional drawings out of your system. And if you come to the point where you're saying, okay, we need to transition from 2D, 3D, or we need to move from one platform to the other, that decision needs to be made based on your business needs and requirements, not based on marketing influence. So marketing influence is giving you access to some information, but the decision has to be made based on what is it with your organization that is causing issues right now, and is changing platform going to fix those issues? And if you think it is, how long is it going to take? How much is it going to cost? Who is going to do it? And is it going to cause business disruption? And if you have positive answers to all of these questions, then you should probably go ahead and make that change. But it needs to be based on your needs and your responsibility and your business requirements for risk reduction. In the next episode, we are going to take a closer look at the software setup, because it's the software that needs to drive the decisions. It's the software that's going to produce your drawings and your schedules, and it's probably the first thing that needs to be addressed for any organization at any milestone.